This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscowane, filling in for Terry Gross. October 3rd was the first anniversary of German reunification, but the celebration has been marred by recent attacks against foreigners. Last week, a hotel for refugees was firebombed, leaving two Lebanese girls severely burned. Three skinheads were arrested. Nearly 200,000 foreigners are expected to pour into Germany this year. The rise of German racism began in eastern Germany, where unemployment is very high and has spread across the country. Earlier this week, Terry Gross spoke with political essayist and novelist Peter Schneider. Schneider is from Berlin, but is visiting this country to give a series of university lectures about Germany since reunification. A collection of his writings called The German Comedy, Scenes of Life After the Wall, has just been published by Farrar, Straus, and Giroux. Schneider also contributes to Harper's Magazine and the New York Times. Schneider told Terry Gross that the extremist attacks are not just against foreigners, but anyone perceived as different.
It would be a very sad result if this coming down of our wall of concrete would create a new wall between the purely Germans, the so-called pure Germans, and the rest of the world. It won't happen, I must say that, because the vast majority in Germany, East as West, the vast majority is shocked by this, and they go against this. There are the groups who are really literally protecting night and day the homes of asylums. This is not said in America, but it has to be said. There's a lot of activity going on against this. There are demonstrations. Now, even politicians finally show up. They have been urged by the public. Why aren't you going there? People asked. They're politicians, and now they show up there. So I do think that we are fit to wipe out this extremism, but it is a real danger.
Since there must be so many people in Germany who strongly oppose the kind of racism and xenophobia and homophobia that's growing now in Germany, what kind of action is being taken to stop it?
My problem is here I really I feel very angry because the politicians limit themselves mostly to argue we must find a way to stop the stream of refugees. And there's a problem. We have had a stream of refugees. I think we have taken 500,000 foreigners only last year and more than 800,000 from East Germany. So this is an enormous amount of people. It would mess up every economy, and there's a problem. There's no question about that. But it is right to discuss how to stop this number of refugees to come. And it is a problem for all over Europe. Other countries even behave worse than Germany in this, and which is no consolation. I was completely upset about the Italians, what they did with the Albanese. I think this was outrageous, and they were lucky that there was a putsch in Moscow because the public interest, the world interest, jumped to this other spot. Anyway, the main problem seems to me that we need clear, very clear signs now from our politicians and from the civic society that we want to live with foreigners, that we want these foreigners that live with us for many years, for generations, and that, of course, we keep on taking a certain number of foreigners as much as we can. There must be the statement, because the message that comes across, if you only talk about how can you stop this, is we have too many anyway, and actually also the politicians would like to have everybody out of here. And the extremists then feel justified. They think, okay, they talk about it, we do it.
Have you or anyone close to you been attacked?
Yes, not I myself, but people that I know, yes.
What were the circumstances?
He was just a friend who, he's an homosexual. He walked across Berlin. He was in a neighborhood that was Well, it was not a good place to go. If you know Berlin, he didn't know it very well. And he was approached by a gang and he was completely beaten up.
Peter, I was wondering if you were Jewish. I ask that because most of the people I know in America with the name Schneider are Jewish. I know it's a German name, but to my ears, it's almost always someone who's Jewish. I ask that because if you were Jewish, I was wondering why your family stayed.
No, I'm not Jewish, but I have a lot of Jewish friends. I always had them in Berlin. Among artists, it's easier than elsewhere to find Jewish people. And I know. I think I know a little bit how they feel about this.
And how?
Well, they feel alarmed, and rightly so. I think they are not the first ones to be attacked now. But of course, there have been vandalization of Jewish cemeteries. There have been clear signs of anti-Semitism. And of course, there is a mood coming back, which I think what I called in my book the narcissistic anti-Semitism, which is a little more complicated. I think the main point here is that there are a certain number of Germans who hate Jews for the fact that Jews remind them to this unique crime that the Germans did against Jews. And there's a anti-Semitism that wants to remove the Jew from the German self-esteem. Just go out of my way, you endanger my self-esteem. This is the logic of the thing. And there are many Germans who don't want to be reminded all the time, they feel, and this is dangerous.
So you think a lot of Germans don't want to be reminded of the Holocaust and the presence of Jews remind them of it and they don't like that?
Yeah, they think this is, of course, we have to do it, one has to do it. It is like a duty which you don't like. And of course, it is not something comfortable to do. Who could deny that? It has to be done. I even go so far, young people have to be urged to be confronted with this past.
You know, I'm thinking, your book is titled The German Comedy. So far, nothing that we've talked about is very funny or ironic at all. Do you think that the tone has really changed since you started writing the book? You know, the tone of life in Germany?
Well, I would always try to tell stories more than to reflect in my writing. I like to reflect by telling stories, and that what makes my book entertaining and a good read. As a matter of fact, you can even about very bitter things, you can tell funny stories, as we know. And there is a tragic comic aspect in this, how things are now. I mean, West Germany, it always pretended to want unification, and now the East Germans somehow have called the bluff, or Gorbachev has called the bluff, whoever. And now they complain that their highest desire is fulfilled. There's something tragicomic in this.
If you're just joining us, my guest is German writer Peter Schneider. He lives in Berlin. He's the author of the new book, The German Comedy, Scenes of Life After the Wall. We're going to take a short break and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Peter Schneider, author of the new book, The German Comedy, Scenes of Life After the Wall. So how often do you go to East Germany, to East Berlin?
I go very often. Actually, I rediscover East Berlin. And not only East Berlin, the whole environment, the whole area around. We could always do it. We could have done this before, but it was very complicated and uncomfortable. You always felt like something really uncomfortable could happen. The police was a Nazi kind of police. And you just didn't want to have to do with them. And that's why, although we could have done it, we didn't do it. And only now we discover that this is a wonderful place, Berlin, that you have lakes all around. I was driving with my kids every weekend to another lake. And some of them are really clean. I was astonished. And in a way, it is like rediscovering your youth, because the small towns, the lakes, the landscape, just for a lack of money, has not so much been ruined as it was in West Germany. And many things are like untouched. I have seen a lake, Stechlinsee, which is something I wouldn't believe it would still exist. It's like a lake, you know, that I would have found, it seems like centuries ago.
Is the culture of East Germany really different than what you're used to in West Germany?
It depends on what...
why don't we talk about Berlin?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it depends. If we take culture in a very large sense, in daily life, means daily life, there's an enormous difference, of course, between East and West Berliners. We have not only two cities and two mayors and two Olympic game sports halls and so on. We have also two sorts of Berliners. There's enormous difference in cultural life and the way they feel and the way even they speak and think. Especially in the way they, what they understand about democracy and about society, they are different. We have to say that, and we have to accept it as a fact. But we have to deal with it without arrogance. I can give you an example of this problem. We have an enormous holding company now in East Germany that is dismantling 8,000 former states companies. And this holding company, of course, has an enormous power. It is an enormous bureaucracy. And by the way, it was a big mistake to have just one of holding company like this and not many in every single of these new provinces. Anyway, but most East Germans see that holding company just as a other version of a communist party. They project their experience, their life experience, that their life is ruled by a foreign power, a rapist power, a power that doesn't care for people and does everything for himself. This experience is projected now towards the West. And I must say, of course, they are always think that fit this image. So it's a very complicated process. There are people who literally say this is a new dictatorship. The West Germany is just a new dictatorship as bad as we had before. It will take years to come to break into this logic, into this mentality, and break these wrong projections and these harsh experiences.
Do you have any people who you're fairly close to who live in East Berlin?
Yes.
Yes,
I have many friends, and they, what I tell you is makes part of this experience with my friends.
You wrote in your book that a lot of East Germans, when they go to the West, complain that the West is cold, that people lack true friendship and solidarity. It's a real rat race. People believe that money is everything.
Yeah.
And what does that mean to you that they're saying that? That that's their reaction?
Well, they say exactly that. Money is everything. And they even go so far and say, so how could we expect you to help us since money for you is everything and it doesn't pay off if you give us any money? They even, you know, believe it in this way that they are completely astonished why we pay any penny for them. And if we do, there must be some economic reason that is not understandable right now. This makes things very harsh. And of course, it is always a stress even for yourself. I mean, you have to find the answer. I mean, you being an American, it's not so easy to say money is not everything. Of course, there's always something true in this. And this could be the good part of the debate, that everybody has to be put in question and that we could also learn from this being questioned. As a matter of fact, my feeling is that West Germans don't want to learn.
They don't want to learn what?
They don't want to be put in question. They are the victors of this 40-year-old battle. And I must say that many behave also as victors do. We should rethink our own history, and we should always have present the question, would we, the West Germans, under Stalinist rule, would we have done any better? It was just luck on which side of the Elbe you have lived, whether you became a Democrat and whether you became wealthy, or whether you remained a poor, repressed communist or anti-communist, whatsoever.
Did you ever think that the wall would be opened?
Yes, I even wrote it in the New York Times in spring 89. It was entitled, If the Wall Came Tumbling Down. I thought that the wall would come down. I never believed in unification, and to say more, I never wanted unification.
Why not?
Most West German intellectuals didn't want that, and I think that we did wrong in this. When the wall came down, I knew from the first moment that unification would come, and I started to accept it then. I didn't want it because this was this feeling of guilt, and there was also a wrong feeling of guilt. We thought, most of us thought, this is the price that the Germans have to pay for what they did in World War II. This is, of course, a wrong analysis. And by the way, it was a too comfortable analysis for Western people, because it's unfair if you say, okay, we give up on unification. We are wealthy, by the way, and we are fine. And the other side has to pay the price. For them to say we renounce on unification would have meant we keep on being the poor and the repressed. So it was actually an unfair thing not to to long for unification. And this has to be said. There's a burden there which intellectual has to deal with that.
So now you support the idea of unity.
Yes, I did from the very first. I did actually from the very first moment, but I never wished. I never wanted it. I even wrote in this article that we had to completely give up on reunification in order to get democracy back into East Germany.
What were your fears of reunification?
The same fear that you have. And they are not completely, these fears are not completely outruled. They are not completely out of the game. The fear that Germans could become predominant in Europe, not only economically, which they have been so far, but also in political terms. And a certain side of a German character, this teacher's mentality, could become a predominant character in Europe, which is not a nice idea to me. There are fears like this, but on the other hand, I pointed out in one article that most of the classic fears, I don't deal with them so much. I think that we Germans are so much have to do with this. With our problems, and we will loosen weight within the next 10 years, that for the near future, these fears are not realistic. In the long run, of course, the fears are right, because we will be a predominant power, a superpower in Europe, and it's very much, depends very much on how we behave and how we define our role in this new Europe, whether unification is bearable.
So you're worried about the stability of democracy in your country?
I think it's a great moment, not only of Germany, it's a great moment of European history. And by the way, I think, especially we, the Germans, we should give us a little ease in living this moment. We just don't, we are not up to the challenge in our feelings. We behave like, I don't know, a lamp had been broken and we have to repair something. It's an enormous moment in history. It's an enormous chance, and there's this mood of lament which is actually not up to the challenge. Anyway, it's the first moment also after 40 years that West Germany has to prove that all these values of democracy, of self-determination, of solidarity, are defended even if the cash box is not does not work out. If the cash box, I mean, if there's a loss in the cash box. We have had a democracy that was never tested. And now our allied friends are kind of fading away, disappearing, and we are responsible for ourselves. And it turns out that the politicians, they are kind of managers who learned how to manage a company, a very effective big economic machine. But they are not up to the challenge to give us an idea about what this historical moment means. And I think that there a lot, we need a new kind of idealism. I'm not shying away from this word. We are an extreme materialistic people right now, and without a certain wanting and longing for being a unified people, we won't make it. Purely with money, it's not going to be done. We need to accept that there will be a loss for 10 years, and it is worth what it costs.
Peter Schneider, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
And Peter Schneider is the author of the new book, The German Comedy, Scenes of Life After the Wall. This is Fresh Air.